Good morning. Wow, did it again. Good to be with you this morning. I'm excited. I have fresh batteries today. If you were here last week, you saw me run out. If you're visiting with us, we're glad you're here. Brave the snow flurry that came along and teased us with a little bit, but I hear we're getting more tonight, so we'll see what happens. If you would like to turn in your Bibles to Mark chapter 7. Mark chapter 7. We live in kind of a world where there are these fake facades, or Photoshop, if you will, or just a different kind of front that people tend to put up that is not realistic or authentic. I can remember when I was in college, I went to Searcy, Arkansas for college. I grew up in Mobile, Alabama, which is a little bigger than Eugene. I went to Searcy, Arkansas, which at the time was about 15,000 people, and I thought I had fallen off the edge of the earth. It was such a small town. I was just not accustomed to it. There was nothing to do. And every chance I would get on a weekend, I would go to Little Rock. And Little Rock is roughly the size of Eugene. And I just needed to go and drive in traffic. I needed to cut and weave. I needed to feel like I was back home again. I needed to go somewhere there was a mall and a decent movie theater and restaurants I had heard of and all those kinds of things. And I remember this drive into Little Rock, over on the left side of the highway, as you were passing between North Little Rock and Little Rock, was this gigantic building. And it was just huge. And on the front of it, it was, whatever the name of the place was, fireworks. And I thought to myself, that has got to be the biggest fireworks stand I've ever seen in my... And I can't emphasize to you, it looked from the road roughly the size of Costco, maybe a little bigger. And I thought, man, how many fireworks do these people have? You know, it's got to be just something unbelievable. And I remember one time with a group of students, I'm not a fireworks guy, so I never went inside. And I remember some time with a group of students saying, have you ever been inside? What do they have? Is it like, you know, the 4th of July in D.C., this is where they go to get their stuff? And a friend of mine started laughing, and he said, you know, it's just a facade, right? And I said, what? And he says, it's just a facade. And sure enough, one time I got on a road that ran beside the fireworks stand instead of in front of it. And once you were beside it, you realized the entire front of the building was just a wall. And behind it was something more the size of maybe this room. And it was just this, and probably even half the size of this room. It was just kind of cut out, and where the front doors were to this gigantic looking fireworks stand, that was the width of the building, actually, was where those front doors were. And it just was a little bit inside. And for some reason, they decided, if we make this look really big, people will come. And I thought, you know, is there a better analogy for our modern society than that? It's let's make things look as big and as huge and as exciting as they can be. And I think for us, sometimes we tend to buy into that. Now, unfortunately, when it comes to church life, we can do the same thing. Because we all get up early on Sunday and we fix our hair and we get everything just right and we iron the shirt and we get it all together and we come here and we look like we are just put together people. And in reality, if you were to find us on a Tuesday evening, we might be a mess. On Fridays, I'm off on Fridays, that's the day I'm not in the office. On Friday, I usually spend Friday morning recovering our home from the week that has been. And I will put things away and I will try to catch up laundry and things like that because our life tends to just kind of go and go and go, and then you have to stop and reset. And I think what we see this morning in the story of Mark chapter 7 is the realization that outward and inward don't always match up. And for us as Christians, part of our challenge is to see that they do a little better. Starting in verse 1. The Pharisees and some of the teachers of the law who had come from Jerusalem gathered around Jesus and saw some of his disciples eating food with hands that were defiled, that is, unwashed. They were unwashed. Now, we are in 2017 in America at a different stage with this stuff of the unwashed and defiled and unclean. When you exit our auditorium, and this is the first church I've ever been in where this has happened, but I'm sure it's probably starting to happen more and more places. There are two Purell things on the wall back there, and you can get your hand sanitizer after I've shook your hand and get me off of your hand. And go on with your germ-free life. And they're finding, I'm reading studies, that we're using so much hand sanitizer now that it's starting to lose its effect. Funny how that works. But We get caught up in germs and cleanliness and all that kind of stuff, and I don't want us to mistake this for that. So kids who are still among us, not in Children's Bible Hour, wash your hands before you eat. This is not what that's about. This is a ceremonial thing. And there were a lot of ceremonial things that God sent in order, and there are a lot of other ceremonial things that people added to things along the way. Tyler this morning came up to me and said, just want to let you know there's two songs before the sermon today. And I thought, well, why did Tyler have to tell me that? Well, one, he's being nice, and just so I won't get up here and stand awkwardly. But two, because there's usually one. And we have strayed away from the one song before the sermon this morning. And I'm hoping this will all still be okay with God, and I think it will. But we tend sometimes to get into that mode where we really get caught up on the ceremony. And the Pharisees are there. And they look at the disciples, and they see a group that is not doing not the thing that's a germ issue, but the thing to them that is a ceremony issue. And explaining a little more here in the parentheses in the next verses, the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they give their hands a ceremonial washing, holding to the tradition of the elders. When they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash, and they observe this and many other traditions, such as the washing of cups, pitchers, and kettles. We also observe the washing of the communion cups after this is all over, or at least Roy does, and then they're clean next week. But we have all these things that are traditions. And for us, I give an example of one already of generally it's one song before the sermon. Now, the little secret is, I'm sure there are a lot of preachers that are very want to grab onto that time and every second that they can get. I'm not afraid if we go over. I hate to let you in on that, first of all. Second of all, I love to sing more. And so if there are more songs, I'm all for it. And if Tyler came to me next time and said, there's actually three songs before the sermon this time, more power to it. What are those traditions for us, though? And I think if we really start to challenge ourselves, we will realize that somewhere, even the most untraditional among us have something that we latch onto. There's something that brings us, I don't know if it's a level of comfort. I don't know if it's that's just the way we've always done it. I don't know if sometimes that tends to cross over, and I think that's the problem we'll see with the Pharisees this morning. Sometimes that crosses over into, if you're not doing this thing, you're not okay with God. And we do tend at times to push those things on one another. And I don't know what it is for you. Maybe it's the kind of songs we sing. Maybe it's the order things happen in. Maybe it's the times that things happen in. Mike and I often trade stories about Tom Rainer's podcast. And Tom Rainer is the guy who wrote the I'm a Church Member book and the I Will book. And we each have started listening to, he does a couple times a week, about a 25-minute church thing. And some of the things you would think of, there's an issue there, and yeah, there's an issue there with some people. And one of his podcasts in the last couple weeks was the death of the 11 a.m. church service. Now, to us, the 11 a.m. church service died long ago because we've always gone 10:30, 10:15, something like that. And our goal, I don't know what it is in Oregon. What I learned in the South, it was so we could beat the Baptists to the restaurants because they had the 11 a.m. service. Can I say that? Is that okay? I remember hearing that when I was a kid and thinking, that's kind of funny. And they had the 11 a.m. service, and they have learned that, and Rainer is a Baptist church guy, Rainer has learned that the 11 a.m. service doesn't work as well in our society today because there is nothing else that happens at 11 a.m. other than lunch. You don't do anything else in life that you've scheduled for 11 a.m. And so they have figured out they either have to push later or earlier because people get up at 8 or 9, and then they're just sitting around for a while. Or they get up at, you know, who knows when, and they eat lunch, maybe want to do something after lunch, but 11 just doesn't fit. And all these churches are beginning to figure this out. But the trouble is, 11 is the ordained time. And so people struggle. The last church I was at, we at one point went from two services to one service when we built a new building. And we went from people worshiping at 8:15 and at 10:30 to people worshiping at what time are we going to choose? And we knew that when we choose a time, someone is going to lose. And so we finally decided, well, let's choose a time where everybody loses. And so we chose 9. It's later for people. It's earlier for people. No one gets what they're comfortable with. Everybody's going to have to adjust. And people were annoyed by that. Now, some people thought it was the best thing ever, but a lot of people were just kind of frustrated because we have picked on their tradition. Now, I jokingly say all of that because, again, we all have one. We mentioned in our Wednesday night class, if you weren't here Wednesday night, the seat you sit in. I laughed to myself when I walked in because the Claxtons are over there and they belong over here. And I thought, are they missionaries over here? Have we done something? And I realized that I get in the habit. I sit there. And if somebody's sitting in my spot, I just move up a row or back a row, but I sit over there. The service should happen in a certain order. What would happen if we came in next Sunday morning and you heard the opening prayer and then immediately we were doing the communion? What if somebody comes in late? Can we do that? Or what if we moved it to the end? All of these things that we just don't think a whole lot about kind of set you on edge a little bit. And the Pharisees are set on edge, I think, for a couple reasons. One, because it's not comfortable. It's not what they're used to. But two, and I hope that this is the thing that we don't do, because they're looking for something. I hope that you walk in those doors back there every Sunday. I hope you never walk in those doors on Sunday looking for something. And I mean looking for the problem. I hope you're looking for Jesus when you come in here. I hope you're looking to be encouraged, to be built up. I hope you're not coming in looking for what's going to bother me today. Is it going to be the length of the sermon? Is it going to be the songs they picked? Is it going to be the order things happen in, that Tyler did two songs before the sermon? What's it going to be today? And instead that we come in looking for our time to encounter Jesus. And the Pharisees miss it entirely because they're looking for something because they see these traditions and they're not being kept. So the Pharisees and teachers of the law ask Jesus, "Why don't your disciples live according to the tradition of elders instead of eating their food with defiled hands? Why don't your disciples do what they're supposed to do? Why don't your disciples do what everybody else does? Why aren't your disciples like us? Why are your disciples such a mess?" And immediately, I think we start to see a tendency that we might have sometimes, which is, I can very easily pick out your flaws. I mean, I could just stand here and think of, oh, wow, those things don't really match. She looks kind of sleepy this morning. Hang on a second. They're not smiling at that. That was a funny picture of Roy, and they didn't laugh. Are they the way God wants them to be? They were singing off key in that song. They weren't singing at all in that song. They're frowning. And we do this to each other. And then when it comes to groups, as the Pharisees are doing to the disciples here, we sometimes get in such a mode that we can pick another group of people, and unfortunately sometimes another group of Christians, and just really relish in how they just don't have it together. And we'll ask questions like, why aren't they like us? Why don't they do what we do? And not with the end mission of, let's all get together and figure this out and do the thing God desires of us. But more with the mission of, I'm here to prove you wrong. That's the Pharisee mindset. And again, something very dangerous for us. Because our culture encourages that. How many times do you get in a political discussion with the intent of coming out with a new point of view? How many times do you get in a discussion about anything that is controversial with the intent of learning something? I think most of the time it's, I've got my point solidified, I'm going to convince you of my point. And the Pharisees, this is how they operate. He replied. And sometimes Jesus replies in kind of a friendly way where he gradually leads them where he's going. Sometimes Jesus is slightly more in your face, and I feel like Jesus is a little more in your face here because he throws at them a prophecy of Isaiah that they have probably thought pointed towards a lot of other groups that were not them. And I think we can do that from time to time. I always laugh with minister friends of we all have a running joke of at least some point in time, someone who has come up to us and said, it's too bad so-and-so wasn't here. They really needed to hear that sermon. And we always think to ourselves, why do we always just assume this has got to be for somebody else? I don't have this problem. He replied, Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you folks, about you great religious leaders, about you hypocrites. Oh, no one likes that. Yet that's the thing we're tagged with so much as Christians. He was right when he prophesied about you hypocrites. As it is written, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are merely human rules. They honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. We have a thing that we often say in our house that drives our children crazy when they apologize for something, and they're very good about apologizing for something they've done wrong, and they will say, I'm sorry, and we, if it's something that we have seen a few times before, we will say, stop saying I'm sorry and just change it. Do something different. And I'm the same way. I will realize I've apologized for the same thing four times, and if I'm really sorry and I really care about this thing or the people that I'm interacting with, at some point I have to do something different. And when it comes to God, if we honor Him with our lips and our hearts are not there, are we really honoring Him? Now, not to say, by the way, that God is not patient and that He is not kind and that He does not stick with us through everything, but God wants the real us, and God wants all of the real us. God doesn't care about the front. God doesn't care about how perfectly ironed the shirt is this morning. God doesn't care about if the hair is just right. God wants your heart. He wants your heart to be in this. And so for Him, the fact that you got up and came here this morning is a good first step. But it's not everything. And if you leave here and life the rest of the week doesn't look anything like a life for Him, it's not what He's looking for. He wants something more than that. And it's so easy for us to go to church attendance. We tend to put that as the thing that's like the indicator of spiritual health. It's probably not an accurate indicator of much of anything other than whether you're here or not. But at the same time, if this is not a priority for you, I heard an analogy the other day of what would it like to be like to be married but never go home? How would that work out? And think about that for a minute. It would just, you know, you love your spouse, you made the vows, you did all those things, but evening rolls around and you just never go home. Occasionally you might drop in a few times a year, once a month, but not most of the time. It's a beginning thing for us to be here, but beyond that, what are we doing? How is this affecting our lives? And are we seeing everything through the lens of the way that God would have us to see things? So your lips are doing the right thing, but your hearts are just not there. You have let go, verse 8, of the commands of God and are holding on to human tradition. Now, human tradition in and of itself is not a bad thing. And I think it's very important that we realize that. We have some fine traditions, good traditions, and not just when it comes to churchy things. My wife is a Nebraska fan because her family has farm there, and I've gotten to know more about Nebraska football since marrying my wife, and they have a tradition that at a home game, when they score their first touchdown, everybody releases red balloons. And I thought, that's kind of a cool tradition. It's a cool thing. Whatever you're a fan of, there are traditions like that that come with it. There are schools that have traditions. I was watching a Michigan State basketball game the other day on senior day, the last day the seniors play a home game. Before they check out of the game, each of them kisses the Spartan at center court. Everybody's been running across for the last hour. But everybody kisses the Spartan at center court. It's a neat moment. There was a guy who had torn his ACL that came out limping out. They put him in the game just for that moment so he could kiss the Spartan one last time. For us in church, we have great traditions. We celebrate a tradition we just had a couple weeks ago with our youth rally. We have the tradition of songs that are meaningful to us. I am on Facebook, part of a group called 728B, and I can tell immediately who knows and who doesn't. And if you didn't grow up in the church or you had the wrong songbook growing up in the church, there was long, long ago the Songs of the Church book, and 728B was Our God, He is Alive, and everybody knew it, and no one has any idea what 728A was. Everybody knows 728B. It's a tradition. Our traditions are not bad, but when our traditions begin to replace the commands of God, then we have a problem. Is the tradition of ceremonially washing hands a bad tradition? No. You want to know where that's rooted in? God had folks do that back in tabernacle, the temple days. And there was a ceremonial washing of hands with the priests that happened. But when the outward look starts to take over versus what the inward thing is that God cares about, then we've lost it. If our tradition of being here on a Sunday has taken over for what kind of neighbor I am on a Thursday, we're missing the boat. Are we keeping the commands of God? So he continued, You have a fine way of setting aside the commands of God in order to observe your traditions. For Moses said, honor your father and mother, and anyone who curses their father or mother is to be put to death. But you say that if anyone declares that what might have been used to help their father or mother is Corban, that is devoted to God, then you no longer let them do anything for their father or mother. Thus you nullify the word of God by your own tradition that you have handed down. And you do many things like that. Now he gives this example where a tradition of theirs has caused them to set aside what God had in mind, which is God had in mind that they honor their father and mother, which means there comes a time where you need to assist mom and dad maybe. And instead, the Pharisees were pushing for that money to be used in other places. Now, is money being used for God a bad thing in and of itself? No. If that money being used for God causes you to not honor your father and mother, which God commanded, do you now have a problem? Yes, you do. So what does that mean for us? We look at the commands of God. A rich ruler comes to Jesus and said, tell me what I need to do. And Jesus lists off a whole bunch of commands. And then the guy says, well, I've done all that. And Jesus said, well, go sell what you have and give to the poor. Oh, I haven't done that one. Or what are the greatest commands, Jesus? And he says, love God, love your neighbor. So can we sometimes allow our traditions to come in the way of loving God, loving our neighbor? Yes, we can. Do sometimes our traditions become so much of a focus of what we're doing that we forget to love God and love our neighbor because we're too busy patting ourselves on the back about how well the traditions are going? Yes, we do. And again, it's easy for us, like the person who would think, somebody really needed to hear that today, I wish they were here. It's easy for us to be putting everyone else's tradition in our minds right now and saying that thing is getting in the way of their doing the thing that God really wants them to do. Turn it inward for a minute. What thing am I doing that is a tradition of man that is getting in the way of what God would have me to do? And I would imagine for most of us, if we're going to be completely honest with ourselves, there's something there. There's something that we have allowed. There's something that society even has created as a tradition that we have taken on that is getting between us and what God would have us to do. And he calls the Pharisees out on this. Again, Jesus called the crowd to him and said, listen to me, everyone, and understand this. Nothing outside a person can defile them by going into them. Rather, it is what comes out of a person that defiles them. And so we've got this outside-inside idea, which is the Pharisees are so wrapped up in the idea of what is outward that they're not thinking about what is inward. They're not realizing the fact that it's not whether the hands are clean or unclean that's the problem. It's what's in your heart and how that's coming out. Now, after he left the crowd and entered the house, his disciples asked him about this parable. Are you dull? Are you so dull? He asked. Don't you see that nothing enters a person from the outside can defile them, for it doesn't go into their heart, but into their stomach, and then out of the body? In saying this, Jesus declared, all food's clean. Are you so dull, disciples, that you're not getting it yet? And I often thought to myself when I read this part, he really could almost every disciple explanation begin with this phrase, because this is kind of the consistent thing. Do you not understand yet what I'm trying to tell you? Do you not get it yet? And the answer, again, for a lot of us, if we're really being honest with ourselves, is no. Really don't get it yet, and I'm trying, but I haven't found all the practical applications of this. Dropping my child off at Sheldon High School the other day for another exciting day of learning, and I'm going through the Sheldon parking lot, and I see a white car from my peripheral coming. I'm going along, and a white car's coming down a lane, and I realize that car's not slowing down, is it? And I finally have to just slam on my brakes and stop, and there are two girls, and they're chatting, talking to each other, never even glanced in my direction, and just turned right in front of me and kept going. And I thought, there was a horn honk involved too, I left that part out. And I thought to myself, these people have taken the driving test. They know how this is supposed to work. What gives? And it's, we get a little comfortable sometimes, a little wrapped up in what's going on around us. It's so easy for us to do, and we do it in all kinds of situations in life. And for the disciples, there's this learning moment, and they just don't get it. They don't get that it applies here, that there's something here for them. And again, do you not see that what enters a person from the outside, that nothing that enters a person from the outside can defile them? It's not about what's coming out in. It's about what's going in and out. And in this, he declares all foods clean. We won't get into all that because there's a lot of clean and unclean foods that are going on in the Old Testament. And by the way, if anybody ever tries to throw at you Leviticus and whether we're eating shellfish or not as an argument for anything, point them here and then move on. Are you so dull? For he went on, what comes out of a person is what defiles them. For it is from within, out of a person's heart, that evil thoughts come. Okay, out of our hearts are where the evil thoughts come. Now, we can have a whole other discussion about how they got there in the first place. And maybe that's where some of the taking in is relevant. And a lot of times, I think we have fooled ourselves into, if I take this in, it's not really going to affect me. If I take this in, I can ignore it. If I take this in, I saw a discussion online the other day, and maybe this will step on someone's toes, I don't know. There's a movie out called Logan right now that's about Wolverine, who is one of the X-Men. You've probably seen the ads on TV. It is a superhero movie. I will bet you if I go to Target and Toys R Us today, I will find toys for it. It is rated R. It is rated R because, as a college friend of mine put it on Facebook, it's uncomfortably violent. And there are a few more of the F-bombs than you would care to have your kids there for. I don't know what that number is, but there's too many in my friend's mind. And I thought to myself, we have somewhere bought into these things don't matter. And that as we take these things in, they're not relevant. And I will tell you that the day it really hit me, when I was in college, I would watch stuff and I would say to myself, this is just a movie. It's not real. I don't talk like this. It's just a movie, and I'm not going to miss out on good movies because of this. And I went to Wikipedia when Wikipedia was invented, and on Wikipedia, there is a list of 50 movies by the number of times the F word is used. And I realized, looking at this list of 50 movies, that I had seen 15 of them in college. And I thought to myself for a minute, how is my life enhanced by that in any way? I mean, were some of them entertaining at some level? Probably. But how was my life enhanced? And the thing I started to realize when it really clicked with me was, as a youth minister, I had to screen movies before we would watch them as a youth group. And I started to realize that the ones that had the really bad language, I knew going in that's going to be too much. What had started to be deaded to was everything in between. And these PG-13 movies that were kind of a little bit out there, but not too far. And I realized what he's saying here is right. The stuff within our hearts, we put a lot of that stuff there. And so there's that sense in which the things that come in matter, and the things that go out got there somehow, because all that stuff was not there when you were born. You did not have those thoughts when you were born. And so now those thoughts that you have, they came from somewhere. It's what comes out that defiles them, not from what comes in. And then these thoughts come. Sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. Now the question is, if these were not born within us, and I understand some of our tendencies are born within us, and that we are sinful people, I get that, but a lot of these things we're learning. And then the question is, well, where are we learning them? And I think we probably have a lot of different answers for that question. Are we going to continue to be content learning more of those things? Or are we going to try to replace it with something worthwhile? And again, I don't like talking about this, because it's uncomfortable, and I can feel it. I can feel the tension in the room. Because everybody is thinking either it's a level past where you're at, or, well, what he's talking about is not realistic. In 2017 in America, you can't avoid all this stuff. Can we make some moves in the right direction, at least? So all these thoughts, and by the way, here's a place where we're challenged a little bit too. So you mean it's not just the problem if I steal, if I murder, if I commit adultery? I mean, that's how the Ten Commandments worked. Those are not the problems in and of themselves. He's talking about thoughts. Where is our mind resting? Because it's from those thoughts that these things happen. Now, the way he will put it in Luke is, no good tree bears bad fruit, nor does bad tree bear good fruit. Each tree is recognized by its own fruit. People do not pick figs from thorn bushes or grapes from briars. I think to myself, I pass orchards and things driving to Corvallis the back way, and wouldn't it be funny if I went out to an orchard and was expecting bananas? Where are the bananas? And I went and complained to the farmer that I couldn't find no bananas on these trees. Or I went out to their grapevines in the wine country and said, I just need some oranges. And they would think I was crazy. If we are Christians, if we are trees as Christians, we should be bearing godly fruit. People should be able to see that in us, see that as a product of who we are. A good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart. An evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart, for the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. These things are stored. And you can try to tell me they're not, but they are stored. I mentioned in class this morning, I've seen the original Star Wars enough times that if we just were watching it together and turn the sound down, I could annoy you for the next 2 hours. And I could just do the movie for you. Now, that is pretty harmless. I wish I could do that with 2 hours worth of scripture because it's more worthwhile. Unfortunately, because I have seen those 15 movies off the list of 50 with the F word, I remember some of those lines too. Stored up. I'd rather find a way to remove that. And by the way, some of that we can remove at some level and replace it with something good. If we replace it with nothing, it comes back. They're stored. We are, all of us, hoarders. We store up stuff. And if it's not in the physical sense that lands us on TLC on a show, it is in the sense that we store up information, we store up things that are important to us. We will see in Mary next week in Bible class that she stores up all these great things that are happening preceding the birth of Christ. We store up things in our heart. And I think if you leave with nothing else this morning, and hopefully there's been something in here that's clicked with you, maybe the question to ask yourself is, what am I storing up? Because if you think you're storing up nothing, you are kidding yourself. And even if your memory is beginning to go, like a lot of ours seems to be doing, you're still storing up something. I waste too much time on Facebook. Sometimes Facebook frustrates me. One thing I love about Facebook, and the first thing I do every time I look at it in the morning, is the on this day thing. And it brings back to you something that happened on this day several years ago when you posted it, if you're on Facebook. And I will have these neat little memories of something funny one of our kids said 8 years ago, or a picture of something when they were so small, or some great memory when something happened, and I will remember that, and it will make me smile. And I realize that I'm storing something up there. What are we storing up? Because it's from what we're storing up that the fruit comes out. Are we storing up things that are happy, that make us pleasant people to be around? Or are we storing up, I'm looking for the problem today, like the Pharisees? Are we storing up the good blessings that God has done in our lives that we can share with others? Or are we just constantly surrounded with doubt that we never really take on? Are you storing up in your relationships the positives within your family or the negatives? Because I will tell you, there are things your spouse does that are annoying. And that's pretty universal. And there are things your spouse does that are great. There are things your kids do that frustrate you and you think, are you dull? Have I not told you this before? And there are things your kids do that make you so proud. There are things that we as a church do that you can point to and say, this is a church moving in the right direction. And there are things that our church does that we need to get our junk together. Which things are we storing up? And this morning, if you tend to store up the wrong ones, don't just write it off to, that's just how I was raised, that's just how I am, can't do anything about that. You can be different, and you can store up the right things. This morning, if you find yourself like the Pharisees, looking to other people for their faults, instead of turning it in on yourself and finding ways that we can all improve, change that today. This morning, if you feel like you have been surrounded by people in your religious life who do what the Pharisees do, turn inward again and realize maybe it's you too. Or maybe what they're doing is not what you thought it was, or maybe they are really negative people and we all just need to get better together. This morning, if you'd like to become part of the family because you realize that we are people who are trying to live inside-out lives in a very inside-out kind of world, we would love to see you become part of this family. This morning, if there's something we can pray about in your life, something you need help with, understand that underneath all of the fixed hair and the makeup and the suits and all of that stuff this morning, it's just people, just regular people with lots of flaws who want to do better, just like you. If there's anything we can help with this morning, please come while we stand and sing.